You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Good morning. I'm Daryl West, Vice President of Governance Studies and Director of the Center for Technology Innovation at the Brookings Institution. And I'd like to welcome you to our forum today on mobile health in China and the United States. And we are webcasting this event live, so a warm welcome to viewers around the world. It is about 9:30 p.m. in China, so we want to welcome any viewers from China as well. We're going to be archiving this webcast, so anyone who wishes to view this after today will have an opportunity to do so through our website at brookings.edu. We welcome any comments or questions that you have. We have set up a Twitter feed at hashtag mHealth. That's hashtag mHealth. So if you wish to post any comments during the forum via Twitter, you're welcome to do so. This event is part of our mobile economy project, which we've been running for the last couple of years. It looks at the impact of the mobile revolution on many different areas of endeavor, and we appreciate the support of Qualcomm for this project. As many of you know, mobile health is growing rapidly in many places around the world. There is a skyrocketing number of mobile subscribers as well as devices. According to GSMA Wireless Intelligence, 3.4 billion people around the world have mobile subscriptions. This is expected to rise to over 3.9 billion by 2017. And, of course, many people have more than one cell phone, smartphone, or tablet. And so when you move from people to devices, the numbers grow up even more dramatically. It's estimated that there are 7.4 billion mobile devices in use today, and that is expected to increase to 9.7 billion by 2017. So the dramatic increase in the usage of mobile devices is transforming many different areas. Over the last 2 years, we've done a lot of work looking at the impact of the mobile revolution on education, disaster relief, entrepreneurship, and poverty alleviation, among other areas. Today, we're going to focus on mobile health, looking specifically at the situation both in China and the United States. Both countries are trying to figure out how to use these devices to help with medical care, how to improve the administrative processing in that area, and also to help in terms of cost containment. So to help us understand this issue, we partnered with several experts at the China Academy of Telecommunications Research. This is part of the Ministry of Industry and Information Technology. We've worked with them on this project over the last year. The Academy hosted me for a visit to Beijing last summer, and we had a great time discussing mobile technology in each of our countries. And it was a great chance for me personally just to see what is going on in China and how they are using mobile technology in the healthcare area. So this morning, we are reciprocating that visit, and we're pleased to welcome several distinguished experts from China. And I'd like to introduce Hu Yu. He is the chief engineer of the China Academy of Telecommunications Research in the Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, and he will make some welcoming remarks. I'd like to welcome him up here.
Dear Mr. David West, ladies and gentlemen, it is a great honor for me to be here at the Brookings Institution, the leading think tank worldwide, and jointly released the white paper on mobile health. As it is seen, mobile technology is a sector developed at the most rapid speed and the most active in innovation in ICT fields, which has a profound impact upon the mode of economic development, public services, and our way of life. By 2013, the users of mobile phone in China reached 1.23 billion at a penetration rate of 90.8%, and of whom 810 million mobile users they use mobile internet, and the penetration rate of smartphone among all mobile users reached 40.8% and up 16% from 2012. The rapid innovation and the diffusion of mobile technology has brought unprecedented opportunities for development in China, enabling us to find a new mode of development in many fields, which is smarter, greener, and more inclusive. Thus making technological advance serve the greater welfare for our citizens. And through cooperative research, it has been found that both the U.S. and China are confronted with the challenges in improving healthcare services, in which mobile health share play a significant role. China, as the largest developing country, is facing an even tougher task. In China, there is a general inadequate supply of medical care resources, with scarcity and unbalanced distribution of community services. There is a large gap between urban and rural areas, between different regions, and between different hospitals. This gap that cannot be bridged in short time. In the foreseeable future, the two problems will be the prominent issues. One is the difficulty to access medical care, and the other one is the cost. The Chinese government has set equal access to basic public services, including healthcare, as is a strategic objective for social development. Our research has found that the development of mobile technology has provided a super means for China to meet the challenges of healthcare services. Mobile healthcare services can effectively ameliorate such issues as the scarcity of quality medical resources, reduce medical cost, and institutionalize the healthcare monitoring and prevention for citizens, thus achieving equal access to the basic services of healthcare. CATR is a Chinese think tank in ICT fields, focused on advance the development and the innovation of ICT and promoting ICT application in all fields in Chinese economy and society. This process, which we call in China informatization, shall in no doubt benefit all citizens in China. Hopefully, this cooperative research with the Brookings Institution can help us to encourage a wide ICT application in healthcare and to advance the general process of informatization and modernization in China. Finally, please allow me to express my heartfelt appreciation to the Brookings Institution and Mr. Dawei West, the Vice President, as well as the support of Qualcomm, and many thanks to all of you. Thank you.
Where's the thing where you turn on? Trying to get the. Great, thank you. So thank you very much for that warm welcome, and it's great to have you and your colleagues here with us. Tomorrow we're going to be posting some things about this event on our new technology policy blog. We set up a new blog called Tech Tank, which is accessible under blogs at brookings.edu, so you're welcome to check that out. So we'll be posting audio and video from the event and a summary of what we talked about as well. What we're going to do now is I'm going to do a short PowerPoint presentation talking about mHealth in the United States, and then we'll hear from a Chinese colleague reviewing the state of mobile health in China, and then we'll have a panel discussion with several experts after that. So mobile health in the United States has really taken off in recent years. It's been estimated that there are over 40,000 mobile health applications that are available now. More than 247 million people have downloaded a healthcare app. There are many different ways in which people are using mobile devices to access healthcare. We see many examples of remote monitoring devices that can record people's vital signs and then electronically transmit that to physicians. We see that physicians are relying on tablets and handheld devices to get the most up-to-date information on treatment, symptoms, different medications that can be used, possible interactions across drugs, and so on. And so we think that this is a way that offers great promise in terms of helping with the administrative processing of healthcare, as well as helping in terms of the diagnosis and treatment of various kinds of diseases. There have been a number of evaluation studies that have come out already that have found several advantages for physicians who rely on mobile devices. The studies find that physicians respond more promptly when they're reading medical test results over mobile devices. They make fewer errors in terms of medication prescriptions and hospital discharges. And it also improves data management and record-keeping practices, which then helps us in a lot of different ways. We all know that healthcare costs have risen dramatically in the United States. When you look at the current situation, in 2014, the United States spends roughly 18.2% of its overall gross domestic product on healthcare. That number by 2021 is expected to rise to 19.6%. The United States also has an aging population. That in 2010, about 12.9% of our population was over the age of 65. That was about 40 million people. By 2020, that number is going to rise to 16.1%. By 2030, it'll be 19.3%, and by 2040, it will be up to 20%. So we can see that there are lots of big challenges facing the United States as we move forward. Affordability certainly is one of those big challenges. This is a figure. It's also in the paper, which I hope you were able to pick up a copy of on your way in. It basically shows the annual premiums both for single as well as family coverage in the United States. And we have this data over the last 10 years. And so if you go back, say, to the year 2000, the annual premium for family coverage was about $6,400. Now that number has tripled. It's over $15,000. And when you look into the future, we expect these types of trend lines to continue. We know that there are disparities in access to health insurance based on income levels in the United States. This is a chart that breaks down the percent of the population that has health insurance between low, middle, and high-income individuals. So, for example, those who have low incomes, only 70% of Americans in that category have health insurance. For those in the middle class, that number rises to about 83%. For those who have high incomes, that number rises to 95%. When you look at chronic illnesses in the United States, we know that there basically are about five illnesses that drive a lot of the health care costs, cancer, heart conditions, diabetes, asthma, and various types of osteoarthritis. When you look at the costs of these different chronic conditions and how those numbers have changed over the last decade, we can see that the two big drivers have been cancer and heart disease. Those are the areas that required the most expensive treatment. Those are also the areas where the costs have increased fairly substantially over the last decade. Asthma and diabetes are at a lower level, but we also know that those numbers in some cases have gone up and also are driving the cost situation. So the question is how mobile can help with these challenges. We know we face rising healthcare costs. There's an affordability gap. There's an urban-rural disparity within the United States. And so we've been looking at the way in which mobile technology can help with various aspects of the healthcare problems that we face. And we think that it can help in a number of different ways. For example, in terms of urban-rural disparities, mobile technology is a way for people in rural areas who may live miles from a particular medical facility to be able to access medical care either through mobile devices, video conferencing facilities, or getting access to medical advice in other types of ways. It can help in terms of administrative processing of information. And so one of the things we did in our paper, and the paper will report additional details on this, is to do a case study of the Flagstaff Medical Center in Arizona. They undertook a pilot project on heart failure management, and we actually have the registered nurse here who helped run that. So in our panel discussion, we're going to hear more about this. But I wanted to start that part of the conversation just by giving you a brief sense of what we found in terms of that project. The project basically involves 50 patients suffering from congestive heart failure. These often were low-income individuals who live quite a distance from the actual medical facility in Flagstaff. So these patients were given wireless devices that basically tracked their weight, blood pressure, activity level, and other types of information. The information is electronically transmitted to health providers, and then the providers then could provide advice to these patients in terms of nutrition and medication, oftentimes without the person physically having to come into the facility. And so we looked at the impact on these individuals prior to enrollment in this project, Care Beyond Walls and Wires, and then what happened following the enrollment. And what we found was there was a drop in hospitalizations, so that certainly is a major benefit. The number of days in which people were hospitalized dropped from 13.98 to slightly over 5 days, so that certainly is a major advantage. And then when you look at the overall hospital charges, there also were major cuts. Because if you can basically shorten hospital stays and make progress in terms of the degree to which people are getting hospitalized, you can have some major cost savings out of that. So we're going to hear more about this later. But there's certainly, between this pilot project and a number of other initiatives that are taking place all around the country, there's a lot of hope that we can actually use mobile devices to help out on different aspects of healthcare. Now, of course, we are relatively early in this mobile revolution, and so there remain some major challenges. Our paper identifies these and discusses them in greater detail, but just to hit a few of the highlights, the market at this point still is small, and mobile services are not In widespread use in many cases, and so there certainly are plenty of growth opportunities in this area. We know there are lots of new apps that are being developed to help people on healthcare. There are new types of medical devices that are hitting the marketplace. So we're expecting this is a market that is going to grow quite rapidly in the future. But there remain a number of policy and legal challenges. One of the big challenges here is in terms of reimbursement for healthcare delivered via mobile devices. That right now we still see inadequate reimbursement for different types of mHealth applications. Certain cases, they don't cover a consultation, diagnosis, or treatment. So this is an area that has really slowed adoption and is an area that we're working with policymakers to try and do a better job in this area. There remains some uncertainty about regulation and standards in this area. Over the last year, the Food and Drug Administration has gone through a lengthy process to try and clarify some of the rules in this area. They have classified different types of mobile medical devices into one of three different categories. There are certain devices for which there isn't going to be regulation. There are others that are going to be subject to regulation. And then there's a middle category where they're saying that they're not likely to regulate unless there is demonstrable evidence of harm to patients. So this we felt was a good step in the right direction, but there still remains some uncertainty, and so app developers, device manufacturers could use additional help from the government just in clarifying what the rules actually are going to be. In conclusion, we think that there are a number of different benefits that can come out of mobile health. We document them in our paper. We think that mobile health can improve access to medical care. It can help in terms of affordability. There are lots of ways in which it is improving administrative efficiency. We all know that one big source of problem is in terms of prescriptions and kind of the old handwritten things, like nobody can read doctor's handwriting. And so by using health IT and mobile devices to improve the administrative processing, we can eliminate errors, do a better job just in terms of processing the information that goes into healthcare. We've seen lots of evidence that mobile devices aid the patient experience. The people like this. Sometimes there have been indications that when people are using these devices that electronically transmit their vital signs to their physician, knowing that their doctor has this information has a beneficial impact on patients by basically making them more aware of particular things in terms of diet, exercise, and healthcare in general. And so they become better patients in the process. So that's a huge advantage right there. And then the last thing I'll note is just in terms of the data part of healthcare, this is an area that's growing rapidly in terms of the development of data sharing networks, data collection, and data analytics using this information. So we think that mobile devices represent a good way to really improve the situation here and help us on a number of the different challenges. So at this point, I'm going to introduce one of our other Chinese colleagues, and she's going to give a short presentation based on the experience that she has found with mobile health in China. She is Hoiha Li. She is the Vice Chief Engineer of the Institute of Communication Standards Research at the Chinese Academy of Telecommunications Research. So I'd like to welcome her to Brookings.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Harley from CTR, and it's my honor to have the chance to give the introduction about mHealth situation in China. Okay, I will introduce the mHealth in China from five aspects. Yeah, first, mobile broadband is playing important roles in China, and there is also similar urgent demands is for healthcare in China. And in China, mHealth developed very quickly recent years. And then I will give introduction about the one case study. And then we have the mHealth perspective in the future of in China. And mobile broadband in China grows very rapidly recent year. And from this chart, we can see that by the end of the last year, China had 1.23 billion mobile subscribers, and the penetration rate is more than 90% of the population. And from this finger, it shows the blue bar is the 3G subscriber, and the red line is the smartphone holder site penetration rate. And from this finger, that the 3G subscriber and the smartphone household increase very fast. And the mobile broadband has great contributions to China's economy also. And it can improve the productive efficiency. And according to our study, 110% increase in mobile broadband was associated with a 4% increase in TFB. And it also has many benefits to the rural communication. And currently, there are about 80% of internet users in China's rural area rely on the mobile phones. And for healthcare, it can get better access to and medical service deliverable by using mobile technology. And in China, we also we have a lot of urgent demands for healthcare. And first is the rising healthcare costs. And in China, the cost of medical care grows very rapidly. And from this chart, we can see in 2011, the Medicare accounted for nearly 5% of GDP. And maybe it's comparing to the U.S., and it's a bit lower. Yeah. And we also facing the aging population problems. In China, in 2012, there were about 9.4% of the current population is over 65 years old. But according to the prediction, in 2015, China, we will have over 30% of people will be over 65 years. And this number is much bigger than the United States numbers. And around the 2015, a large portion of Chinese people will reach the age of the retirement. So in China, we are facing the very pressure from the aging population. And another challenge is affordability. And from this chapter, we can see that though our government make efforts to expand the health insurance coverage and to decrease the cost, healthcare cost from the individuals, but currently it still people still need to pay nearly 30% of their health care costs by their own self. And Another challenge is that the disparities between urban area and rural area, and it's quite apparent in China also. According to the China Health Statistic Year book, urban area has more medical personnel and sick beds, this kind of resource, than rural area. And the dark blue bar shows the total, the average medical resources, and the light blue bar shows the urban medical resources, and the gray bar shows the rural medical resources. We can see that there is a big differences between urban area and the rural area. And another challenge is about chronic illness incidence and mortality. And from this table, we can see that the incidence of the chronic disease in China, this includes many of different kinds of chronic disease, increased very year by year. So, and especially chronic disease accounted for 85% of the deaths in China every year. So it's a very big challenge from the chronic illness. And from chronic illness, China is facing a great financial losses, and the chronic disease is very expensive to treat. And this slide gives some statistics about the cost on chronic illness, and we can see there lots of money are spent on this aspect, and it's very critical for the government to adopt policies to better treat and prevent chronic illness in China also. And another issue I'd like to mention is about cardiovascular disease. And according to these two fingers on this slide, we can see that cardiovascular disease in China increased very rapidly, and the cost for the cardiovascular disease in China increased responsibly. And from this we can see that there are lots of challenges and urgent demands for healthcare in China. And 4M Health can have many benefits for the M Health, so it's developed very quickly. Just as Daryl just mentioned, that we can have lots of benefits from mobile health, such as improve the accessible and affordable of healthcare, and improve the administrative efficiency. And it's also aided the patient experience by providing a means to deliver medical reminders and diagnostic information to patient and physician. And it's also by using the mobile technology and devices, well, helpful and convenient for the policymaker to collect relevant information. And so in recent years, Chinese market, mobile health market grows very rapidly. And this two chapter shows the prediction from GSMA, and from GSMA's prediction that Chinese M-Health market and Japan M-Health market will be largest M-Health market in Asia in the world, while the U.S. and China will be the largest M-Health market. And from this chart, we can see the Chinese M-Health market is growing rapidly, and especially according to the prediction, especially in 2015, we'll have a very great increasing on the M-Health market. It will exceed 10 billion RMB by the end of 2011. And another quite important trend in China M-Health market is the wearable medical devices. and its market grows very rapidly, and there are lots of wearable medical devices in China already. Yeah, and this figure shows the market and the relevant predication to the wearable medical devices. And nowadays in China we have lots of practice on mHealth already, and we also do research on one cases. It's the wireless heart health program operated by Life Care Networks. And the program deployed the 3G enabled cardiovascular screening and monitoring system to resource scared community health clinics such as Shandong and Anhui and Sichuan and Chongqing. And from this program, it also got a lot of achievements, and from this number list here, we can see that 96 community doctors are using the system, and over 11,000 patients in 4 community health clinics have benefited from various from this program, and over 1,000 patient participants have been screened for serious cardiovascular condition and referred to high-level clinics for the further treatment. And while we look to the future of the mobile health in China, Deborah mentioned that there are lots of challenges for mobile similar, and in China we have the similar challenge also. First, the mHealth market is just at the initial stage, and only 2.9% of Chinese mobile phone has installed mHealth application. And for the policy and the legal challenges in China, the Chinese Ministry of Health only allows mHealth service provider to offer consulting service through mobile devices. So it's not authorized to treat a patient or offer prescription. And there are also, for mHealth, there are lots of private solutions, and it's also some challenges and to the regulation and standards related to mHealth. And our government also published lots of documents to promote the process of medical information, and this slide shows some documents published recent years in China, as I mentioned that Chinese broadband developed very rapidly, and it's celebrating especially recent years, and first the Chinese government has awarded TD-LT licenses, and the State Council issued the broadband channel strategy and the implementation plan last year. And the innovation in the mobile internet environment is very prosperous in China also, and there are lots of mobile internet applications already. And so the healthcare in China will speed up mHealth will speed up in China while we look to the future. And this is my introduction about the mHealth situation in China, and thank you for your attention.
So thank you very much for that presentation. You did an excellent job. Her English is much better than my Chinese, I can assure you. So, we'd like to continue our discussion of mobile health in China and the United States, and I'm pleased to welcome Gigi Sorensen here, who is to my left. She is a registered nurse at the Northern Arizona Health Facility. She's a director for telehealth at the Flagstaff Medical Center, and she's been running the Care Beyond Walls and Wires project that we referred to in the paper and that I mentioned briefly during my presentation. So I'd like to start with you, Gigi. So you've been running this innovative program that uses remote monitoring devices to treat patients who are suffering from congestive heart failure. And so I was just wondering, what has your experience been with this program and how have patients responded?
At Flagstaff Medical Center, which is part of Northern Arizona Healthcare, we've been pleased to have this pilot program sponsored by Qualcomm. And what we've seen has been a tremendous impact on our patients, not only our patients, but our caregivers. And so that patients feel that they're very connected to their caregiver. The technology that's been able to be deployed, we face challenges just as in China with rural areas. The counties where we deliver the majority of our care to our patients, the average population density is 10 patients per square mile at times. It can be very remote. And with us covering 62,000 square miles of land to cover for our patients, it can be challenging to get patients in. So having the ability to remotely monitor these patients so they don't have to travel 2-3 hours for a 15-minute physician appointment is critical. And we have found patients become very engaged in their health care through this ability to monitor themselves at home, to feel safe at home by themselves, or with an elderly parent in their home. And it's been just remarkable how they've adapted to it.
And can you tell us a little bit about these 50 patients? I mean, I understand they're generally low-income individuals, but who are the types of people who participated in this program?
Actually, we had a stereotype in our head when we started this program that they would be very low-income and very rural, and we found that they covered the gamut. We had patients, we had actually at one point four patients enrolled that were in their early 30s, so not even.
And they're suffering congestive heart failure?
Yes, sir.
That's discouraging.
Very, very. And so we found that they covered the age range from 30s. We currently have a gentleman who just turned 90 in our program. And so all age ranges, we were split between men and female in the pilot project. And it was just amazing who came into the program and how they responded to the program. We also had a stereotype in our head that trying to get an elderly, especially an elderly Native American, to accept the technology would be difficult. And that did not come to pass either because of multi-generational families that existed. And if an elder didn't want to try the technology, boy, there was some teenager in that home that wanted their hands on that remote control or that, or that cell phone. So it was very well received.
Did you notice any gender differences? Did male and female patients have react differently to the devices and the general experience?
Our population, interestingly enough, was split almost 50-50 between men and women in our pilot program. And so there was no real sense of adoption one way or the other. But we did find that men who were living alone tended to have a stronger connection to the devices in the programs and were a little bit more easily adapted to it.
And then in terms of the impact on the actual medical care, so I presented some data in terms of hospitalizations, but could you just talk a little bit about the impact that you saw in terms of administrative processing, cost savings? I mean, how did it play out for the patients?
It played out just in a fantastic way. Our hospital had just was starting to early adopt some transitions work in regards to more aggressively discharge planning for our patients. But by being able to add not only the technology, but a nurse care coordinator attached to that technology made a critical impact. And so that the coin phrase that I started coming up where the tools were cool, but if you add a nurse to it, it's really super. And so...
and you're not just saying that because you're a nurse.
Oh, absolutely not. No.
Just want to be sure.
Yeah, no bias there whatsoever. But using the technology and being able to have a person in their home who maybe wasn't a very remote area or had no access to care without a car or distance and money to get there, just putting the technology in the home and being able to talk a patient through an anxiety, I think I better come to the emergency room. I'm not feeling good. I know many times our care coordinator would say, just put on the pulse oximeter that measures an oxygen level and a heart rate on a patient. And let me talk to you. Well, how are things going? Now look at that number. It's not that bad. How can we get it? How can we work you through this? Have you taken your medicines? What's going on? And so by them seeing that, no, they really weren't going to die at that moment, and they didn't need to run to the emergency room, made a huge difference. And having that phone, being able to transmit that data in a real-time fashion was critical.
And so I know you've been running this pilot project. Is the project continuing? And I believe you mentioned that this was in one facility, but you now are kind of doing telehealth in several other facilities as well. So what are the plans for going forward with this program?
Our administration quickly saw the benefit of this program, of our pilot program with Qualcomm. And even before our first year was done and all our data was in, we had enough anecdotal stories that had arisen and anecdotal financials to show that sustainability was critical for this program. And so we made a commitment to, through our operational budgets, purchased additional kits where we can monitor multiple patients, not only for congestive heart failure now, but for many other chronic diseases. And so not only has this program expanded from Flagstaff Medical Center, but to our other hospitals in our healthcare network, where we are using them in the community, and in multiple communities across North and Central Arizona, and a strong commitment to give this. And we've also now developed hybrids, where a patient may not want to transmit their information, but they want the tools, and then they will call themselves. Because sometimes people just are a little hesitant about the privacy, a little big brotherish, you know, having a phone telling people what you're doing without your ability to control that. And so we've developed hybrid models for the monitoring and continue to see excellent results in this.
And the last question, and then I'm going to bring our Chinese guests into this discussion. So you've had some experience kind of seeing how this played out in your facility, seeing what worked, what didn't work. Are there lessons for other medical facilities? Like if someone from another state came to you and asked for advice, what would you tell them?
That's been the beauty of this. We've had multiple calls from facilities all over the country asking us how to implement it. We learned a number of lessons. One is that the more you can talk to your administration in regards to that, this is not a revenue producing, but it's a cost savings initiative. It's a patient and provider satisfaction initiative using tools and technology that are easily accessible, easily spread across multiple diagnoses, that patients and their families will key into this dramatically. And also to go one-on-one with physicians when you're going into this program early on, then say to them, tell me why your patient shouldn't be in a program like this, not can I enroll your patient. That was a huge lesson that we learned early on. And to be able to say for a few hundred dollars what you can give a patient, the savings on the end, the satisfaction on the end, and the feeling of connectivity patients have to your healthcare center is invaluable.
Great. So, Mr. Yu, so we heard lots of interesting things in the presentation in terms of what's going on in China. And I'm just wondering, what do you view as the best opportunities for mobile health in China?
Okay. Sorry, I speak in Chinese and then Mr. Can help me. 我想从两个方面来说这个就是移动医疗的它的一个机遇在中国的一个机遇。
You asked me about what kind of opportunities mHealth presents in China, and I would like to talk about it in two parts.
首先第一个方面呢，其实我个人认为，移动医疗呢。 对于中国的来说最大的机遇呢，不是还不是移动医疗本身，而是说它可能会改变中国的为或者是为中国的医疗服务提供了一个巨大的新的发展机遇。
So personally, I don't think the mHealth per se is the greatest opportunity for China. What I think the kind of opportunities it will bring to China is how it will transform China's or the Chinese delivery of healthcare services.
可能各位也知道，在中国，现在民众里面觉得最大的在生活中觉得最大的一个这个困难的话，其中有一个就是医疗。
I think healthcare is probably one of the biggest or even the biggest challenge that most Chinese people feel that they're facing.
这里面最大的问题是在于中国的巨大的人口，而这个医疗资源短缺，而且非常的不均衡。
So we know that China has a large population, healthcare resources are scarce, and they are not equally distributed.
我举个例子哈，我在北京工作，然后，我知道这个中国的全国各个省的人，很多人都会来北京寻求医疗，因为北京有最好的医疗资源。
For example, I work and live in Beijing, and I know that people from all over different provinces of China would come to Beijing to seek health treatments, because Beijing has the best providers of healthcare services.
我个人的话，如果我去医院的话，我大概需要提前一个星期，我可以通过电话或者通过互联网，预定这个医疗服务。
If I want to go to a hospital for treatment in Beijing, I would be able to make appointment by phone or on the internet a week ahead of time.
但是对于很多在其他省的人，他们来北京可要花很多的这个。 金钱来和时间来做这个医疗。
However, for people from other provinces, it would take them, cost them a lot of money and a lot of time for them to travel to Beijing.
而如果对于中国的农村地区的话，这个问题就可能挑战就会更为艰巨。
And the challenges are even more larger for those people who reside in the rural areas.
那么，中国政府呢，有一个目标，就是希望实现这个像医疗、教育这些基本公共服务的均等化。So
the Chinese government actually has a goal, and the goal is to be able to achieve equal distribution of healthcare and educational resources.
但是这个目标，那么可能是非常难以完成的。
It seems like this goal is almost insurmountable.
因为可能要在中国的广大农村和偏远地区，要建立起很有效的医疗服务体系和资源，可能不是一年几或者不是几年能够完成的。
In order, because the task to build a very effective healthcare network in especially the rural areas in China is not something that we can achieve within a matter of years.
所以呢，我想移动医疗提供了一种，可能是为我们提供了一种思路和一个模式。Therefore,
I think when it comes to mHealth, I think it might be able to suggest to the government a certain kind of model that we can follow.
或许它可以让我们以一个更低的成本和更智能化的方式来实现我们医疗服务的均等化。
So maybe we may be able to achieve equality in healthcare services through lowering the cost of the services as well as to raise the level or the opportunities to use intelligent devices.
从我个人的理解，移动医疗在中国仍然是处于一个非常刚刚起步的一个阶段。
mHealth is still in its fledgling state in China. This is my personal understanding.
然后在目前医疗服务里面，可能发挥的作用是非常有限的，在目前这个阶段。
And so in the overall healthcare infrastructure, mHealth actually is still playing a very small role.
但是
我想，其实但这里面我个人觉得呢，可能有两个，可以实现我们两个转变。
However, I think mHealth is able to help us make two changes, perhaps.
那么一个转变呢是说，我们过去的医疗服务是侧重于疾病的治疗，而现在呢，通过移动医疗，我可能会更加注重预防和健康的服务。这样的话能其实是可以整体上减少我们整个医疗服务的那个费用。
So in the past, our focus, when we talk about healthcare in China, the focus was on treatment. I think mHealth will bring our focus to prevention and wellness. And therefore, I think if we can do that, it might be able to bring down healthcare costs in China.
第二个转变的话是我们过去的医疗体系是以医院为中心的。
And also in the past, when we talk about healthcare,We also focus on hospitals.
我举个例子，我的公司，大概有几百米远的地方，就有北京市一个非常有名的医院。
For example, near my office, just a few hundred meters away, stands a very famous hospital in China.
我在我单位的门，在我的公司的门口，每天都是这个交通完全是堵塞的，因为大家都去这个医院。
And we can witness bad traffic every day in front of my office because everyone is going in that direction to the hospital.
那么，我想可能移动医疗可以使我们未来的医疗服务从以医院为中心而转向以病人为中心。
So I think mHealth will be able to help us to move our focus from hospitals to the patients.
我想现在还是看到的只是一个非常早期的一个状况。但我个人相信这是一个大的趋势。
Although currently, as I said before, mHealth in China is still at its very beginning state. However, I can see that this can develop into a major trend.
这是那么第二个方面呢？我想就是就是说一下这个 mHealth 本身，它可能在中国的这样的一个条件和机遇。
And then what else, what other opportunities can mHealth present in China?
刚才我的同事也提到了，其实 mHealth 在中国的发展里面现在还面临很多的像标准、法律、管制 等问题。
So as my colleague had told you, as China continues with its development, we are still tackling issues such as standards, legal issues, and also regulatory issues.
但是我个人理解，中国的广大民众对于移动、对手机的本身的使用，是非常，他们非常非常非常喜欢用，而且也。也用得比较好，应该说有某种偏好。
And however, personally, I feel that the Chinese people, they do prefer mobile devices, especially cell phones. And I personally feel that they are quite savvy at it, and they like using them.
那么这里面一个很大的一个背景呢，就是中国的所谓的信息化的进程，也就是说。ICT 技术应用于中国的经济社会各个领域的这样的一个发展进程是相比美国来说要晚了很多。
However, if we look at the big picture, we understand that informatization in China has begun slightly behind, for example, the United States, as far as how it had influenced our economy and our development and so forth.
也许很多人没有计算机。或者不会使用计算机，就像很多农村的民众一样，他可能不会用，但是他一定会用，他会用手机。
In China, this is what happens: is that many people, including or especially people in the rural areas, they may not own a computer, but they all have a cell phone.
那么去年2013年呢，中国的互联网的网民呢有6.2亿，其中这个用手机的是5亿。
Okay, so last year, according to our data from 2013, there were 602 million internet users in China, of whom 500 million are people who own a cell phone or a smartphone.
那么现在在中国呢有两个就是相关的跟这个移动医疗相关的情况发展很快。那么一个是智能手机的发展，一个是移动APP 的发展。
So there are two phenomena that we can see in China relative to the development of mHealth. One phenomenon is that the development of smartphones, and the other one would be the development of mobile apps.
那么在中国，现在很多的智能手机大概只要几百块人民币，可能相当于只有几十美元，
So in China, smartphones are inexpensive, maybe only a few hundred renminbi, or just 10, 20, 30 US dollars.
所以智能手机在中国的渗透率每年提高得非常快，现在可能已经超过40%的移动用户都是用的智能手机。
So smartphones penetration rate goes up very quickly every year, and currently mobile users, 40% of mobile users are using smartphones.
我想还有一点可能跟美国人类似，就是可穿戴的设备，现在有很多的创新。
And one thing that is quite similar to the situation in the U.S. here is the innovation of wearable devices.
那么我个人观察到的，在中国的这个可穿戴的智能设备里面，绝大部分都是跟 mHealth 有关的。
And I understand that most of these wearable devices in China have to do or are relevant to mHealth.
那么还有一个就是APP 移动的 APP， 虽然那个在中国现在的移动 APP 的数目还不是很多，大概只有几千个 APP。
So currently, as far as the development of apps, there were probably only a few thousand that had been developed in China, so the number is still very small.
但是发展很快。我知道有一款应用大概有1000万用户，然后有5000个医生。
哪有1000万个？
就是我有一个 APP， 大概已经有1000万用户在使用它，还有5000个医生为它服务。
就是跟 mHealth 有关的，是吧？
对，跟 mHealth 有关的。
But however, I can see that the trend of the development of this kind of mHealth apps will be going very speedily. Currently, there's a particular app that has 10 million users, and there were 5,000 doctors or healthcare professionals involved or engaged on the apps.
对，最后总结的话。就是中mHealth 在中国还是一个非常初期的阶段，但是我个人相信，它有非常大的这样一个发展的空间和前景。
So in conclusion, I think that mHealth is still in its beginning stage in China. However, I can see that it has a very bright future, and there's a large potential for us to tap in.
And if I could just ask one follow-up on that last point. So you said there was a mobile app that had 10 million users and 5,000 doctors. What is the app being used for?
它很多就是应用于这个，大部分是用户可以把自己的个人的状况，去传到这个 APP 上，然后呢，可以知道是说。我可能会有什么样的问题，什么样的疾病，这样呢，我可以上医院去治疗。所以是
问这些医生是吧？
对，他可以问这个医，他就可以就问医生。这样的话，我可以说，比如说我今天心脏不好，我可以告诉他我有心脏不好，医生会提供一些服务，然后可以建议他上什么样的医院去观察，所以他更上一个预防性的。
So the users they're leaning towards preventive medicine, meaning that they can use this app.To consult the doctors and telling the doctors what kind of symptoms they have experienced and ask the doctors whether there's a need for them to go to the hospitals for treatment.
Yeah, this moment.
Okay, thank you. No, that's very helpful. So, Ms. Li, what are the biggest barriers in terms of mobile health in China?
Thank you.
Okay, I will answer your question in Chinese also. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And please translate for helping to translate. 我觉得移动健康这个概念很大。 然后的话呢，我觉得就是实际上在研究它的研究它这个问题，还有它的一些机遇挑战的时候呢，需要分开去说，因为它的发展还是不太一样的。I
think if you just look at mHealth, this is a very, very huge concept. So when we want to talk about the opportunities versus the challenges, I think we have to talk about them separately.
我觉得就是。 目前就是按我的理解来说，实际上可以把它分成三大部分。一块儿的话呢，就是mHealth的话呢，可能是用在医院里头，辅助就是说现在医院里头也布了很多的支持移动技术的一些这个一些设备啊，也部署了相关的网络来支撑这种，比如说药品的跟踪啊，还有这个移动查房这些应用。嗯。
I think we can look at mHealth in three components. The first part would be related to hospitals. For example, we can use mHealth as part of the network, as an accessory, for example, to track down medication compliance and other kind of preventive measures.
另一块呢，就是院外用的，但是它主要用于就是诊疗跟那个诊疗相关的一些相关的应用，在诊疗门诊，诊断辅助诊断相关的应用。The
second part of mHealth would be on the diagnostics, that would be the component.
Yeah. 然后另一块呢，我觉得是健康健身相关的一些应用。And
the third part would be wellness.
那目前的话呢，就是像这种支撑这种健康健身的，因为它和这医疗的诊疗系统是分开的，所以发展的比较快。And
as far as the wellness part of the component, I think it is developing quite faster than the treatment component because it is a completely independent system.
我昨天查了一下，就是涉及到，因为中国现在已经有一些，譬如说。 像美国有Google眼镜啊，中国其实也有百度眼镜啊，这些可穿戴设备。那现在大概有十来个上市的公司，所以这块的话，我觉得可能只是一个市场推进的速度的问题，不存在很大的障碍。So
yesterday I did some research, like in China, we also have what you have here, like Google glasses, and we also have our Baidu glasses. And I researched and found out that over a dozen listed companies had already been involved in this. So I think this is just a matter of how fast you can open up the market.
但是和这个就是诊疗辅助性的相关的应用呢，就有一些问题，就是面临一些挑战了。那一个的话呢，就是我觉得就是年轻人还好，就是接受起来还好。 但是老年人的话，像我父母，感觉他们对这个不太熟悉这种通信技术啊，所以用起来的时候呢，是有一些困难的。But
when it comes to diagnostics or come to treatments, I think the challenge should be that this may be the technology may be quite easy for younger people, but for older people like my parents, they will have some problem dealing with telecommunication technology.
应该是整个这个就是还是发展初期吧，应该有一个接受的过程。And
therefore, I think in terms of the technology development, we're going to still see a transitional period before we go to where we want to go.
另外一块呢，就是刚才也谈了，其实实际上是政策的因素。像在中国的话呢，是不允许这种远程诊疗还没有放开。嗯。
So the other issue we are facing would be policies. In China, telemedicine is still not something that the policy is supporting at this moment.
但是从目前来看的话，因为这个远程诊疗涉及到人们的一些这种人身的安全，涉及到这种医疗纠纷这种法律相关的问题，所以估计近期内也很难做出调整。
because the potential problems that telemedicine may run into would be safety of a person and also medical disputes and all of this. I think we're still we're not there yet.
所以在这种背景下呢，就是这种诊疗辅助性的相关的应用。刚才那个徐Mr.徐也提到了，现在有很多的应用，所以他们的商业模式就是他们怎么去运行和现有的这种医院的医疗的系统，怎么很好的就是相互协作吧，找到各自的他们自己的发展空间和产业模型是最关键的。
So I think when we talk about diagnostics and treatments, just now my colleague had also mentioned that there are quite a number of apps that have been developed, but I think it is just a matter of how they're able to figure out the business models and how they can work with the hospitals and following that path to, for their own development.
Okay, thank you. And you mentioned wearable medical devices, and so I'm just curious, how are they being used in China? Like, what are the types of wearable devices that people are using?
Okay. 它可以测你的这些心跳了，可能还有血压了，然后它可以通过手机和APP可以上传这些数据。So
personally, this is my personal observation. I think when it comes to wearable devices, I think the most popular one is probably the bracelets. The bracelets that are able to measure the person's vital signs, including heartbeats, blood pressure, and so on, and then the data would be transmitted via a cell phone to the destination.
除了手环以外，现在也有一些其他的一些设备，像这个手表，手表也有类似的功能，它可以监测到你的这个睡眠这些都可以，还有像这个衬衫。 穿的衬衫也有在做的，还有包括这个鞋，这个智能鞋也有，但是这个都是规模都很小，用的用户不是很多，手环可能是最大的。And
like I said, bracelets are the most popular. I have seen people wearing watches, smart watches as well, and that the watches can monitor a person's sleep, sleeping pattern. There are also people who are that are under development are T-shirts and shoes, but T-shirts and shoes are still in a very small scale. They're not as popular as the bracelets.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's open the floor to questions from the audience. We have a question right here in the front row. There's a microphone coming up behind you. And if you can give us your name and your organization, please.
My name is Li Yang. And previously, I have done some health researches. First, I want to say thanks for your presentation. And I think mobile health, other than internet or computer, have a great potential. But I think for meaningful health care, we had to start from the beginning, the meaningful health. So far, even now, we don't even know which provider is reliable. And we know a lot of abuse, whether it's in hospital or private physicians, or they are related. So they have a misdiagnosis and false medication and injection, or even cause the death. And there's no way to complain, and they have double billings to both government like Medicare or to the individuals.
Are you talking about in the United States or in China?
I mean, probably just maybe basically it's in the United States, but I think it can happen to any other country because it's maybe institution-wise or system-wise is related.
Okay.
I think we have to say to prevent all these abuses, even internet or computer or your cell phone, that can be disconnected anytime if you want to say something and they will not allow you to say. So I just wonder if you address this type of issues so we can have meaningful progress.
Actually, maybe I could have Gigi answer. So Given the fact that mobile technology is still in its early stage of development, you work in a medical facility. How do you determine which products to use, which are reliable, which have a record of safety?
For us, what we do when we look at devices that we're going to give out to our patients, number one, since we are moving medical information across, at this point we're looking for FDA-approved devices that have been shown to be HIPAA-compatible, encrypted for safety measures to move things back and forth. We also, when we give them their cell phone, we maintain the ability to wipe that cell phone block certain applications that they could use, or how to maintain the battery life, essentially, to cut down on a lot of extraneous work. So what we try to do is as simple as possible, and when you make it as simple as possible for the patients to use and then for the provider on the other end to get the information and synthesize that information, those are things that we look at that are key. So usability and FDA approval.
Okay, there's a gentleman right there. Was a question.
He was ahead of me.
Okay, either one. We appreciate your politeness.
Hi, I'm Fred Altman, and I have a question both for Flagstaff and the Chinese. And that is, when people in the hybrid system get comfortable with the system, are they likely to transfer to the automated data transfer? And do you see the same problem in China? There are people who are reluctant to have their data reported automatically.
Yes, Mr. Altman. When we would have patients who would routinely download the information every day, very methodical about it. Others would be hit or miss. I spoke to a gentleman just on Tuesday who had backed off reporting, but now has his health has taken a real decline, and so all of a sudden now wants his kit back so that it can be easy for him to transmit that information again. And so I think what we have found is that patients who have had this information, who have gotten it, whether they automatically upload or they call and report, if they become in tuned that this is ingrained as a habit in how they then take accountability for their health care, it makes it easier for them, and they get less and less concerned about the automatic upload.
So I don't know if you understood the question, but in terms of electronic transmission to physicians, does this happen automatically, or does a person have to do something to report and upload the information?
My understanding is the situations are very different.
像我就是一种情况的话呢，因为有些这个年龄比较大的人，他可能不太懂得用这些智能的设备，所以现在呢，一种就是中国现在也在试验这个，在一些社区呢集中放一个设备。然后的话呢，这个，这个叫做被监测的人，他可以根据他的自愿去传送他的相关的设备。
So there are several situations. One situation is that more elderly people are not very familiar with this kind of intelligent devices in China. And so what China is experimenting is that we set up an equipment.Or a device in one particular area in the community, and then we ask people to go there voluntarily.
应该是有些人还是很愿意的，因为他可以获取一些，就是通过这些数据嘛，他了解自己的状态，然后的话呢，能够很好的去判断自己身体的一些状况，然后给出一些相关的诊治，这是。
And a lot of people are willing to do that because they understand the benefit of. Going over there, providing the data, and getting back information of how they should go on for the next step in terms of treatment.
我补充一下我们同事啊，其实在中国跟美国有一点不同的是呢，中国整个医疗体系的数字化的水平上是比较低的。
So there's one thing that China is different from the United States, that when it comes to healthcare, we are not so digitized yet.
所以在我们中国政府里面有一个目标，是在未来几年里面会建立这个数据库。这个数据库包括什么？电子健康档案，还有电子病历，这个过去都是没有数字化的。
So the Chinese government has a goal that within the next few years we'll be able to build up a data bank for medical records.
然后这个那么其实现在这个阶段呢，就是说因为个人的健康档案和病历它都没有数字化，所以在网上传送呢是很少的。但是随着我们完成了这个工作数字化以后的话，那么可能有很多的数据会在网上传送。
So currently we don't have a lot of data being transmitted across online because we don't even have this infrastructure yet. But I think that once that's completed, we will see a lot more data flowing in the system.
那么我个人相信我们会面临一个挑战，就是这个个人健康的数据是非常 private 的，那么在网上传送怎么保证它的安全，可能是我们每个人会考虑的，可能我们从法律角度和管制角度会要去解决这个问题。
So I think security, online security would be our largest challenge, because we know that all this medical data are very private, and how maintaining the security of this data is our biggest challenge, and maybe we have to tackle it from the legal perspective and from a regulatory perspective.
Okay, thank you. This gentleman here has a question.
Thank you. My name is Anupam Khanna. I'm from NASSCOM, which is the IT Association of India. It represents both Indian and foreign companies. I just flew in, and boy, am I glad that I came, even though I didn't unpack as yet.
Thank you. We're honored that you joined us.
Yeah. So I have three quick questions. First one for Gigi, that we have found in our research that the biggest barrier to actual adoption and diffusion of IT technology tends to be at the interface of technology and people, organizations, the reluctance. And I was wondering what sorts of organizational changes you are in the process of making or have made to ensure that these processes are such that are most conducive for making good use of this technology. The other two are also related.
Let's let her answer that, then we'll come back to you. Gigi?
Yes, otherwise I'll forget. How we adapted the technology was when we looked at what devices we should use, we went strictly foundational, because if you are able to measure a blood pressure, a weight, a heart rate, an oxygen level on a person, you can cover so many different diagnoses. Very simple tools, very simple pieces of data. The simpler the phone is to use for a patient, the better off it is. And so by cleaning screens so that there was only a certain number of icons that showed up, by having devices that you pushed one button and then you were done, it was just easier. And so taking our caregivers who are not used to using technology and getting them comfortable first with the equipment, and teaching them how simple it was, so then they can, when they're working and teaching their patients on how to use the devices, it was more like second nature, just an additional extension.
Yeah. Actually, just to add to that, my question was more to do at the other end. You know, departments in hospitals, you have different people doing different things,
yes.
And you find that they're all living in silos. But this sort of technology becomes much more when that flow of information and processing and storage, you literally have to revamp from the beginning. Did you have to do that?
Yes, sir, we did. Our telehealth department is filled with nurses. We don't have an IT component. And so we had to reach out to our information technology partners at the hospital and the facility, where they're like, you want to do what? Why would you put that in someone's home? How is that going to work? And so teaching our IT partners the clinical components. And I've learned more acronyms and than I should know, being a critical care nurse, for technology components. We can, I know Kelly can talk a patient how to get a phone out of airplane mode in her sleep, so that we know how it works. And so a lot of basic education, a lot of sitting at the table together to define what is the goal of the program.
Thank you. For countries such as China and India, where access and affordability are very big, we find that diagnostics perhaps might be may have a very high return. So in addition to wellness and prevention, the first thing that you mentioned, the diagnostics, then you have the monitoring, and then you have the curative facilities. We are just wondering to what extent are you emphasizing the diagnostic part in China? And again, how do you organize yourself? Because China had a very good primary healthcare system, which got totally destroyed about 10 years ago, I would say. And now you have been able to revamp it. And are you using technology in trying to revamp that? My hypothesis may be totally wrong, so because we are, I'm saying it from the outside, so tell me I'm totally wrong.
Okay. 我来稍微看看说解释一下。那么其实移动医疗用于诊断的话，我个人觉得还需要一个比较长的时间。
I think you asked about diagnostics. I think that in China, it's not going to happen immediately.
但这里面有其实整个的远程医疗在中国的发展也是一个非常初级的阶段。
Because the overall development of telehealth in China, it's still very in its infant state.
我曾经个人我有一个个人的例子，是我父亲，在一个很小的县城里面。当他生病的时候，曾经做过这个远程治疗，然后通过远程治疗请求那个一个大城市的医生给他提供这个服务。
你做到了，做好了是吧？
没做好
啊，没做好。And I have a personal experience in this. My father lived in a small town, and he was sick, and he requested for telemedicine services to be provided to him from a professional in a very big city in China.
对，我在北京工作的时候呢，我可能个人不会觉得这个远程医疗有那么重要。当我回到家乡的时候，在那个时间，我会觉得这个非常的重要。
Because when I was working in Beijing, I have access to a lot of the services, and I didn't feel that it was so much of a big deal to me. But when I went back to the small town where my father lived, I realized how important and how essential this kind of service is for him.
但是，就是从目前看的话，无论是远程医疗也好，移动医疗也好，可能它要真正的去用于诊断的话。还有很多的这个法律问题和规制的问题需要去解决。
But if we want to talk about applying telemedicine to diagnostics at this point in time in China, I think we still have a lot of issues to tackle, including legal issues and regulatory issues.
但是有一个好的消息来说的话，就是中国的卫生部门呢，把远程医疗作为未来几年解决中国。医疗服务均等化的一个重要的一个手段。
But the good news is that the Chinese health authorities do believe that mHealth is a tool for us to ensure that future healthcare resources being those resources to be distributed equally.
在未来几年里面，我们会有一个 project 去推进远程医疗。那我相信移动医疗也会在这里面发挥作用。
So in the next few years, we're going to have a program specifically to encourage and promote telemedicine in China, and I think mHealth will be part of that overall development.
Okay, thank you very much. And Gigi, if I could follow up, in terms of the situation, in terms of reimbursement in the United States on mHealth and telehealth, both from the standpoint of like Medicare and Medicaid, and private insurance companies, what do they cover in this area? What don't they cover? And what should they cover?
So they don't cover everything, and what should they cover is everything. No. currently, these devices are not covered, and the monitoring is not covered. What we would like to see as healthcare providers is that putting a blood pressure cuff or a scale or a mobile phone into someone's home that's going to be used as their healthcare device should be covered the same as any piece of durable medical equipment. It's no different than a hospital bed or a phone or a cane. It's keeping the patient safe. It's keeping them connected. And so I think an effort is afoot through professional organizations, through industry, to work with Medicare and Medicaid to see these devices as critical and reimbursable, along with being able to currently, if you provide telemedicine services into a patient's home, that is not a billable service either. The patient has to be in a clinic environment. So to be able to, for a physician to bill for a visit in a patient's home would be the ultimate step, so patients don't have to travel at all.
Okay. There's a gentleman in the very back who had a question.
Robert Brook from RAND at UCLA. When I've been in China, I've been very impressed by two things, your emphasis on population health and your emphasis on community, which is very much different than the United States. Any intervention we do in the hospital should be labeled not M-Health, but M-Health Care or costs. We haven't been talking much about it in health. And what I'm really asking for our Chinese colleagues are two questions. The major health concerns of a population of the elderly is depression and loneliness. Are there plans in China to use this technology to try to reduce that, given the one-child policy and all of the political issues, and improve the mental and social health of the elderly, number one? And on the other side is we've been really effective at trying to destroy you by exporting cigarettes and fast food and all those things that are going to make your cost of health care look like ours in 10 years. So to prevent the chronic disease epidemic, how are you going to use, on a population basis and a community basis, M-Health to prevent this epidemic by changing the culture of health in China and preventing you from looking like us in 20 years and having to spend 30% of your GDP on health care?
This is the reason we invited them here, actually, so they could see firsthand.
But
does the question make sense to you?
Yes, you mentioned about senior citizens. Yes, they do have a lot of challenges.
其实刚才我的同事在他的 presentation 也提到了，因为老年人对于使用这个手机呢，他其实不是很会用的。
So in China, for example, my colleague had mentioned that they are more the elderly people find using this kind of smart devices a little bit intimidating.
像我的母亲，她就手机都用的不是特别好。
For example, my mother has a hard time trying to figure out how to really make full use of her cell phone.
那我举一个例子哈，有一个很有意思的例子，就是目前在北京有一个非常流行的 app， 是就用于这个 taxi， 就是订阅 taxi 的。
So let me give you a good example. In Beijing now, there's a very popular app in reserving a taxi cab.
你知道，如果你出去需要订出租车的，只要用这个 app， 用这个手机去订一下这个 app， 就用这个 app 订一下就可以了，非常的方便。It's
very convenient, very easy to use.
但是最后的一个结果是什么呢？ 发现最后很多的老年人发现他上街以后打不着车了。
But what happens after this is that a lot of people, if they try to catch a cab on the street, they will never be able to find one.
因为他们不会用这个 app.
Because they don't know how to use the app.
所以我想要解决这个问题的话，可能我们在一个很大的问题是说要能够帮助老年人能够学会使用 这些技术。另外在可能我们需要开发更方便他们使用的这个设备和应用。
So I think maybe our first step would be to how to educate senior citizens in terms of accepting this kind of technology. And maybe we have to even go further of developing devices or technologies that are more suitable for them to use.
那么第二个问题呢，就关于这个通过这个建立一个文化啊，我觉得这个里面是可能有很大的这个可能和发展的机会。
As far as building the kind of awareness of wellness in China, I think M Health actually there's a lot of potential in utilizing M Health to get that done.
举个例子来说的话，比如说我拿着手机上餐馆，我那个拍一下，比如说麦当劳的这个汉堡，我真的就可能显示出它有多少热卡路里，这样呢，我可以去看看，是说我是不是吃的太多了。
For example, I can use my smartphone, take a picture of a hamburger at McDonald's, and then the smartphone will also interpret the calories in the hamburger, and then when I go home, and I'll be aware that oop, I ate too much today.
那么现在已经做到一些可以拿手机。还有一些智能的这个腕带手表可以记录你的心跳血压甚至呢现在还有做血糖的，所以我想这个空间，就是我先提的这个空间，我觉得是非常有可能的。
For example, currently we already have the smart watches that can measure our vitals, and I think there's one that actually can measure your blood sugar level as well. So I think there's a huge potential there.
Okay, thank you very much.There's a gentleman right here on the aisle who has a question.
Emmett Tidings.
There's a microphone right behind you.
Emmett Tidings, local tech serial entrepreneur. My question is, I have two for Gigi. I think I can ask him at once. He won't forget. One is, who do you see in the future, say, maybe a year from now, paying for the services you're delivering to your mHealth people now? And secondly, I took the liberty of tweeting your comment earlier that... For administrators, you'd suggest that it is a cost-saving measure, not a revenue-generating opportunity. So my question on that is, who is receiving the cost savings on that? Is it your organization? Is it the users?
Good questions.
Great questions. Thank you. I think sharing the cost of this, as we look forward to how to build this out, and if you look at it from a population health management initiative or even an ACO development type things, institutions are very concerned about readmission rates. And the key diagnostic categories of congestive heart failure, acute MI, pneumonia currently, where institutions are receiving a penalty if patients come back within 30 days. It doesn't matter if they come back to their facility or a neighboring facility. I think looking at that cost sharing in regards to facilities covering, sharing with us the cost of the equipment, working also with payers to be acknowledging with them that if we can dramatically reduce their length of stay, if we can reduce their charges, that it behooves a payer to help us cover the cost of these devices until Medicare and Medicaid will step up and help us with this. I also think that by even we can go direct to the consumer at times because there are patients and their families who are willing to help cover the cost of some of these devices themselves to remain independent in their homes, to garner a sense of safety and connectivity to their health care provider. So I think there's multiple avenues in regards to how costs can be looked at with this. And not only is it a cost savings, cost avoidance is important also, and that comes again in regards to reimbursements and penalties to the institutions who are caring for these patients.
Thank you. So I have a question for our Chinese guests. So last summer, your state council issued its broadband China strategy, and so I'm just curious how that will shape the future of mobile health.
Mobile
So yeah, you were referring to the broadband Chinese strategy that was that came out last year, and that was constituted in an imitation of your broadband strategy here in the United States.
在这个宽带的中国的战略里面的话, 对移动这部分有一个特别的强调。
In this particular strategy, there was one area that places emphasis on a mobile technology.
我们认为可能 移动宽带对于中国来说有特殊的意义。
We think that mobile broadband actually has a particular significance for China.
特别是移动宽带，就智能终端和移动互联网，能在很大程度上改变中国的这个经济的发展模式、社会服务的模式，还有人民的生活的方式。
I think that in particular mobile broadband, as well as it, its relation to its connectivity to intelligent terminals, as well as other kind of interfaces, would have a large influence on the future development of China's economy, how it would provide social services, and how the lives of the people, or the way the style of how people live their life would change.
我想可能有你们在座的有可能有看过我们的那个战略，在那个战略里，我们在2015年和2020年对于移动通信和移动互联网都有一个目标。
So I'm sure many of you have actually read the strategy, and in the strategy, it has a goal that by it has specific goals for what we should achieve by the year 2015 and 2020 as far as mobile telecommunications and mobile internet are concerned.
那我们在，我记得在2020的目标里面，我们是希望移动互联网能够全面的普及到中国的每一个民众。
So our goal is that by the year 2020, that every person in China will have access to mobile internet.
我想对中国的发展是至关重要的。That
is going to be very critical to the future development of China.
It's a very ambitious goal. Yes, this gentleman, you have a question? Yep. Yeah, right here.
Bill Jorn is my name.
Yeah, there's a microphone for you.
Bill Jorn is my name, ROI3.com. We'll be creating apps for the developing world, including China and India and so forth. I'm interested in more detail concerning the transition of the location of the population in China from the rural areas to mid-sized cities, tier two cities, tier one cities, and how the younger people who go to the cities are going to stay in touch with their parents or the elderly, particularly with the reference to the one-child policy, and more detail on how this technology might be able to be used in monitoring health and other things by the younger people.
So, as I understood the question, so you know, rural people are starting to migrate to urban areas. How does that affect what's happening in the mHealth area?
就是那个农村的人到城市，他们会发生什么？是吗？很多人到了城市，年轻人到了城市以后，他们怎么还没有分别家，将来对人还是有什么影响？对，我想是这样，就是我想有两个方面的事情，就是这些农村的人到了城市以后，他能不能够享受到就是。基本的医疗服务，这个第二个来说的话，可能这个问题在于是说 mHealth 这里面能够起到什么的作用？
So I guess we can look at it from The two ways. First is that when people migrate to the cities, how are they going to be able to have access to medical services, and then how mHealth is going to be able to facilitate that. That's the second the part.
我想可能在中国呢，我们现在就是在过去的几年呢，中国已经建立了这个像农村的这些。 它有基本的这个医疗服务的保障体系，这个已经建立了，我们叫信农合制度。
As you know, in China, for the last few years, we have already built up a very basic health social security network, which we call the co-op system.
在这个情况下，也就是说，每一个农村的居民他都可以享受到基本的医疗保障。
So basically, every resident in the rural areas is guaranteed a very basic health services.
但是会有一个技术的问题。当这些人从农村到城市来工作的时候，那他怎么解决他的这个医疗费用的、医疗真的报销这些问题？还有保险报销这些。
But then there's a technical question in that once these people move from the rural areas to the cities to work, how are they going to resolve the issues of reimbursements? How are they going to resolve the issues of insurance premiums?
客观的说，现在这个情况我们还没有完全解决这个问题，但是在未来几年中，可能这是中国要致力解决的几个问题，也就是说，无论我在哪儿工作，我都可以享受到一样的这样一个，比如说我的医疗保障。
So basically, I can say that this question or this problem has not been completely resolved, and that's the task for the Chinese government in the next few years in trying to figure out how we can allow the same person enjoy the same services wherever he may be in the country.
所以在这个这点来说的话 ，ICT 给了我们一个非常好的解决的思路。
So I think ICT.
ICT. Yeah.
So I think ICT is actually one way to kind of give us a jump start to think about this problem.
然后第二个方面的话是关于其实是这些年轻人来自农村的年轻人本身的，这些年轻的农村他其实可能很多都受过至少是中学的教育。
And then for the younger citizens from the rural areas, most of them they actually are high school graduates.
所以他们现在很能够非常熟练地使用这个智能手机和移动互联网。So
for them, it's not a challenge or a difficulty to use smartphones or mobile internet.
我给一个例子哈，就是十年以前，叫网吧，这个网吧我不知道叫什么 ，Internet Cafe 是吧？在中国非常的发达，但是现在它急剧的下降。
Let me give you an example. For example, 10 years ago, internet cafes were very popular in China, but now we're seeing fewer and fewer of them.
为什么？因为过去很多来城市打工的这些农村年轻人会用这个网吧，但他们现在都用手机来上网了。Because
the patrons of those internet cafes in the past are mostly young people who came to the cities from the rural areas, but all of them now know how to or have a smartphone.
所以我想，其实 mHealth 对他们来说是非常容易被接受的，而且他们天然上对这个可能是比较会偏好这些。我想，所以我觉得是 mHealth 对这个人群里面应该是有比较好的发展，很好的发展前途。So
I think we have a large potential in this particular group of population because we think that they would find it very easy to be receptive to mHealth, and it could also become their preference.
Okay, thank you very much. I think we have time for one last question. Did you have a question? Okay. The gentleman in the very back.
Hi, thank you. Nate DiNicola. I'm a health services researcher at the University of Pennsylvania. My question is about the app with the 10 million users and the 5,000 physicians. Has anyone looked at using this app and if it has decreased emergency room visits or other kinds of acute care utilization?
Acute care... What's the last sentence?
Acute care utilization, like urgent
like going
care.
To, like going to a hospital, going to an emergency room.
问题是什么？
是，有没有
你整的是吗？整的。ICU 是吧？我们现在的。
We could just say the answer to that question is no.
那我们个人了解哈，现在应该是，到目前为止 ，MHS 用于比如急诊服务的应该是很少的，很少的，我都很少见到这样的 case。嗯。
嗯，we personally we don't hear a lot about cases where mHealth is involved in acute care or ICU or that kind of.
但是我个人啊，对呀，但是我个人认为可能这里面有非常好的一个可以用的空间，因为我了解到，在中国也很多人是由于心脏病，比如说猝死的，他可能是在晚上或者在什么地方猝死的，这个非常很多的，嗯。
But I personally feel that we also see a large potential in this particular area because in China, a lot of people, there are quite a number of people who died of heart diseases sometimes at night, at home, in their sleep. So that's what happened.
很多是因为心脏的问题，所以如果我们有一个类似于这样的一个可穿戴的设备的话，能够监测到这个这样的疾病的话，它可以其实可以提前告警的，而且可以和这个我们中国的叫120系统，就是和中国急救系统可以连接的。
So for example, if we can have a device that's wearable for these people, and then it may emit warning signs, and then it may be connected to similar to what we call the 911 line here.
所以我相信可能过几年以后，可能我觉得会有很多的应用了。
So I see a lot of potential in its applications in the future.
Okay, thank you. So I think we're out of time, but what impresses me in looking both at the Chinese as well as the American experience is just all the experimentation and innovation that's taking place in each country. Each country is grappling with different aspects of healthcare service delivery, cost containment, improving the administrative process. And so there's a lot of cool things happening in how people are using mobile devices to address those types of issues. Obviously, each country is still relatively early in this revolution, but given the interesting projects, Arizona as well as elsewhere that are taking place, it just seems like there's very good potential that as we learn from these projects, we'll be in a stronger position to make more effective use of this in the future. But I want to thank Ms. Lee, Mr. Yu, Gigi Sorensen for sharing their views with us, and thank you very much for coming out as well. Thank you.